Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Have you ever thought about what you would do if someone told a horrible lie about you? I have. I owned a large dance school for 12 years, and when you work with kids, if you say the thought of someone making a false accusation against you has never crossed your mind, I don't think you're being honest with yourself. What if someone told a lie about you that was so serious, it ended your life as you know it, taking away your future, your family, and your freedom? One of the people at the center of today's story says that's exactly what happened to him, and he is in a literal fight for his life, claiming the state of Florida is about to execute an innocent man. This is the story of the murder of Shelley Boggio. Let's get into it. 1985, Florida. Frank Boggio has moved, he and his daughters, from Battle Creek, Michigan, to Kenneth City, Florida. Frank and his wife, the mother of the girls, had just divorced, and he picked up and took his daughters with not a single possession and very little money to start a new life. These daughters of his included a set of twin girls, Shelley and Stacy, and they were 13 years old at the time of the move. He enrolled the girls at 16th Street Middle School in St. Petersburg. That school is now called John Hopkins Middle School. Shelley missed 67 days of school that year and then dropped out. The girls were already smoking and drinking, and they had no interest in school. And their father loved the girls very much, but he was having a tough time keeping an eye on them and disciplining them. And so they did what a lot of kids would do if they had little supervision, which is whatever they wanted. Shelley came from a close family. Her sisters remember her as full of life and, most importantly, very funny. They said she always had a smile on her face and she could make anybody laugh. She was just a young girl who was making her way through a tough life, finding her way on perhaps a rougher path than was ideal, but she was loved and she was cared for and she mattered very much to her family. May 5th, 1985. Shelley Boggio, her twin sister Stacy, and their friend Stephanie Forsyth were hitchhiking near St. Petersburg. As they were standing on the side of the road, some men they knew pulled up to them. These were men that the girls had partied with before. And yes, I'm saying men, grown men, who party with now 14-year-old girls. So we're starting off here at dirtbag DEFCON level one, just running right over the top of the red flag poles, trampling the red flags in the dirt as we go, and headed straight for slimeball ground zero. One of the men that Shelley and Stacy knew was named Jack Piercy. Jack was living in this rented house in St. Petersburg with his pregnant girlfriend, Gail Bailey, and his friend, James Daly, who they called Jim or Jimmy D. There was a third man who was kind of crashing on their couch at the time named Oza Duane Shaw. The three girls, Shelley, Stacy, and Stephanie, got into the car with Jack, James, and Oza. Oh, that just makes my skin crawl. Grown-ass men picking up 14-year-old children to party with, and who you know they were hoping to have sex with. It's just really disturbing when you think about it. Jack drove the car of six back to his house, where the group smoked and drank beer before deciding they were going to go out for the night. The group was having a good time partying, but might not have been aware someone in the house was very angry about what was happening, and that person was Jack's pregnant girlfriend, Gail. I mean, think about it from her perspective. You're sitting at home, pregnant, and your dirtbag boyfriend is out driving around drinking with his buddies, stops to pick up three children, and brings them home with him. I mean, yeah, Gail, I'm sure that was really awful for you, but maybe instead of just being annoyed at this obvious that you're dating, call the cops. It was the 80s. I mean, believe me, I've got plenty of stories of my own, as do all of the women my age, and that is perhaps why my level of disgust is hard for me to hide. The group left the house to go party somewhere else in the same car. They dropped one of the twins, Stacy, and the friend, Stephanie, off at an apartment, leaving Shelley alone in the car with these men and with Gail. The group, which now consists of Jack, James, Gail, and Shelley, goes to a nightclub called Jerry's Rock and Roll. Now, we have the obvious issues here of how a 14-year-old girl who very obviously looks like a child is allowed into a nightclub with a group of lecherous adults, but we'll have to save that discussion for another day. Again, the 80s were a different time. Gail later reports that the group sat at a table together, and while there, each of them had three drinks. James said he asked Shelley to dance, but she said no. Oh my gosh. Just, can you imagine being 14 years old and having some gross old man come ask you to dance? It just gags me. Ugh. It becomes obvious to everyone in the group that Shelley and Jack are flirting. It is especially obvious to Jack's girlfriend, Gail. As the night progresses, Gail looks up and Jack and Shelley are dancing on the other side of the bar. Now, Gail is obviously very unhappy about this. Shelley told James that she didn't want to dance, and now she's dancing with Gail's boyfriend, slow dancing with her boyfriend, to be exact. Around midnight, the group headed back to go to the house. Gail says she has to go to the bathroom, and the minute she stands up and leaves the room, Jack takes that opportunity to say he is going to take Shelley home, because of course he does. This, you know, gives him the opportunity to make sure he can be alone with Shelley without Gail there. When Jack and Shelley say they're leaving, Oza Shaw, the one who's been crashing on the couch, asks Jack if he can ride with them so he can use a payphone. Remember, it's 1985, no cell phones, and apparently the group didn't have a house phone either. Well, Oza needs to call his girlfriend back in Kansas. So according to James Daly, he stayed at the house with Gail, and Jack, Shelley, and Oza left the house. James said he went into his bedroom and went to sleep. Now on the road, Jack stops the car at the first payphone they see so Oza can call his girlfriend, a woman named Betty Mingus, who is, like I said, back in Kansas, where Oza and Jack are both from. As Oza is on the phone talking with Betty, she hears the horn honk. Oza tells her that the people in the car are getting impatient, and Betty says, "Well, who are you with?" Oza tells her, and this is very important, "Jack and some girl." Oza then tells Jack to leave him at the payphone because he wants to continue talking to his girlfriend. Phone records will later confirm that Oza was on that payphone with Betty around 1:15 a.m. Jack and Shelley drive away, and later on, Oza walks back to the house. He doesn't hear Jack come back into the house for several hours, and later says that it's about 3:30 a.m. when Jack finally gets home. According to James Daly, at around 3:30 that morning, when Oza hears Jack come back in, Jack goes into James Daly's room and wakes him up, telling him that he's got a couple of joints and he wants James to come and smoke with him, but he also says he needs to talk to him about something important. James says he gets up and grabs a six-pack of beer out of the fridge and gets in the car with Jack. They drove out to the Bel Air Causeway, and Jack tells James that the thing he needs to speak with him about is that Gail wants him to leave. Gail wants to use the room that James is using as a nursery. Jack says, no hard feelings, and James says, no, there is none. I'm fine. I can leave. He said he was basically living his life as a drifter at this point, and he felt like it was time for him to move on anyway. So as the two men talk and drink the beers, they start playing frisbee on the beach. This is according to James Daly. James says the frisbee goes out into the water a couple of times, and each time it does, he wades out to get it, grabs it, you know, they keep playing frisbee, and eventually they got in the car and they went home. Now, when they get home, Gail sees Jack and James return to the house and sees that James' pants are wet. This becomes very important later on. And what we also need to keep in mind is that Gail is very unhappy about everything that has gone on this night. James Daly had no idea that those wet pants and other people's versions of that night were about to put a stop to whatever life he was ready to move on to. May 6th, 1985. The following morning, a bridge tender goes to work and sees something strange near the water's edge. As he looks closer, he sees the naked body of Shelley Boggio. She is covered in stab wounds and she is dead. He calls the police, who arrive within minutes and begin to set up their crime scene protocol. The police and the techs remember the case very well, saying they could tell that this poor girl fought for her life and that she had many defensive wounds on her hands from trying to protect herself. She had 18 defensive wounds on her hands alone. She had been beaten, choked, and stabbed a total of 31 times, but all of that is not what killed her. Shelley Boggio had been held under the water and drowned. She died there on the beach and was left alone by her killer, waiting to be found. That is absolutely awful. I thought about what she must have been thinking while she was being attacked, and it makes me really sad. Shelley was there in the water with her little turquoise ring on, her whole life taken away from her. Shelley's family was notified of her death, and her twin sister, Stacy, told police that the last time she saw Shelley, she was with Jack Piercy and James Daly. Before long, the police are at the house where the group had partied the night before and where Jack and James live. When they arrive, Gail Bailey is the only one at home, and she tells them her version of the story. She says she believes that Jack and James left around midnight and that when they came back, James' pants were wet. Now that is very different from what not only James, but what Oza Shaw tells them happened that night. At this point, the police obviously want to talk to Jack, James, and Oza. But Gail tells them that earlier that morning, as Shelley's body was being discovered, James, Oza, and Jack left the house with their bags packed, telling her they had to leave the state. Now, of course, police are beyond suspicious. These guys just up and left. Where did they go? Well, we already know, according to James, that Gail's story is incorrect. He said he went to bed. Gail had got up and left the room before Jack left with Shelley and Oza, so she might not be so sure about where James was. But that's not what she tells police. According to James, the reason he had got up and left that morning is because Jack told him Gail wanted him out of the house. And then he said that Jack suddenly said, "Why don't we go to Miami and party one more time, you know, before you take off?" James claims he was actually really looking forward to seeing Miami. And so he and Jack headed there to part ways, and Oza decided to come along to party with them. The three men got to Miami and checked into a hotel. James and Oza shared a room, and both of those men checked in under their real names. Jack Piercy, however, checked into his own room using an alias. Now, the problem with James' story, as he tells it to police later on, is that he only stayed in Miami for a day. He had said he was really excited to go to Miami because he wanted to see the city. Wouldn't he have stayed longer in the city than just a day if he wanted to see the city? But then again, it kind of sounds like these guys were not working regular jobs. Maybe he didn't have any money. He didn't have the money to stay in Miami and he had to get moving. Either way, just a day after arriving in Miami, the men part ways. James Daly gets on a bus and heads to Arizona. He later claims that he carried on with his life. He met a man who took him to California to help him with a construction job, and that he was just living his life out in California working, totally unaware that anything bad had happened. After James left for Arizona, Jack Piercy left Miami and drove to Kansas, where he's from. So why didn't he go home? I think that's obvious. Well, the police are, of course, looking for these men. They want to speak with them about Shelley's murder. 2 weeks after Shelley's murder, Jack is found in Kansas, in his hometown of Olathe, and he's brought in for questioning. The interrogation of Jack Piercy is, this guy is something else. First off, he thinks he's some kind of a lady killer, and, well, he's just one of those people who, I don't know, after listening to the interrogation, I personally wouldn't believe a word that comes out of his mouth. During the interrogation, Jack admits to being there on the beach that night. He admits to knowing what happened to Shelley, but he puts all of the blame on James Daly. He tells police that Jimmy D had been driving the car and he was passed out in the back. He claims he is awakened by Shelley's screams. He tells the police, "I just want you to know that I got out of the car and tried to stop Jimmy D from stabbing her, but when I saw it, I puked all over the place." Jack claims that James went crazy for some reason and that James killed Shelley in a rage. Now, these Kansas City cops know Jack Piercy. In fact, one of them calls him a frequent flyer. He's a criminal. He abuses women. He steals. He has issues with alcohol and drugs. He had even faced a murder charge in Kansas. He's just a bad guy, and they know he's a bad guy. After hours of interrogation, police arrest Jack Piercy and tell him he will stand trial for the murder of Shelley Boggio. November 6, 1985. 6 months to the day after Shelley Boggio is murdered, James Daly is located in California and he is arrested. When he is questioned, James claimed he didn't even know that the murder had taken place. He claims he was in shock, as police told him that the girl he had been partying with on the 5th of May had been killed. He said he knew absolutely nothing about it. He admitted that he had been with the girl that night. He told investigators all of the details about what the group had done and claims the last time he saw Shelley was when she left the house with Jack, who was supposed to take her home. He admitted that, yes, he had come home with wet pants, but that was only after Jack woke him up around 3:30 to go have their talk on the beach, and that his pants were only wet because he was retrieving the Frisbee from the water. Police asked him why he ran, why he left the state. James tells them he wasn't running. He claims that if he had been running, he wouldn't have been working as an employee under his real name. He tells them he had no reason to run because not only did he not kill Shelley Boggio, he wasn't even aware that she had been murdered. Well, the police do not believe James Daly. He is arrested and extradited back to Florida to stand trial for the murder of Shelley Boggio. He is sent to prison to await his court date. And well, things only get worse for old Jimmy D while he's there. I find it interesting that they focus so hard on James and not on Oza. Oza was actually in the car that night and says Jimmy wasn't. So I wasn't able to find information on why they focused so much on James and not as much on Oza. But I think it goes back to what Gail told them about, you know, him coming in with wet pants. And remember, you know, Gail was not happy about the whole situation. I'm not saying she's lying. I'm just saying I find it interesting that they focused on Jimmy and not on Oza. I also want to address something. I've had a few comments lately that have kind of bothered me on this. I'm aware that when I tell these stories, we're focused a lot on the suspected killers. And today, of course, I'm focusing on James Daly and Jack Piercy. And I have to focus on the perpetrators because of who they are and what they did and how they are integral to the story. But I also want to point out that a child is dead, murdered by a monster or maybe two. This is a kid who had a family and parents and a future she never got to experience. Yes, okay, maybe she was doing some things that were growing up a little bit too fast. Nobody deserves to die because they go out partying. No one. And I also think that if James is innocent, this is a really good cautionary tale about what happens to you when you hang out with dirtbags. Jack is obviously the scum of the earth. He's got a pregnant girlfriend who's more worried about being jealous than she is about breaking up with this piece of shit who's after teenage girls. And then you've got James, who, let's make no mistake about this, would have hooked up with Shelly in a heartbeat had she wanted that. And he was a grown man. So let's be very clear about who James Daly was at the time. All three of them, Jack, James, and Gail, were, I'll keep it nice, incredibly flawed human beings, even before Shelly came into view. Shelly was just a kid, and a kid who didn't understand how dangerous people can be. She didn't deserve anything that happened to her for being naive. No one does. We all make some poor choices and do things as kids that we don't realize are dangerous, and none of us deserves to have our life taken from us for making a choice that doesn't hurt anyone else. Yes, this is a story about some very slimy men, but it is ultimately a story about justice for Shelly Boggio. November of 1986. Jack Piercy goes on trial for murder. His attorneys claim Jack was simply a bystander, that James Daly was the killer, and that Jack was innocent. Well, the jury does not believe him. He is convicted and sentenced to life in prison, but the jury stops short of sentencing Jack to death. In the summer of 1987, James Daly goes on trial for the same charge. Unlike Jack Piercy, James Daly has no history of violence against women or a lengthy arrest record. There is absolutely no evidence linking James Daly to Shelley's murder. And in fact, police have testimony from Oza Shaw stating that James wasn't even in the car with them when he and Jack had got in the car to take Shelley home. Oza tells the police that James stayed back at the house and was asleep in his bed when he returned from making his call on the payphone. This doesn't sway the prosecutors for some reason. They are zeroed in on James Daly and they believe he's involved. The state prosecuted Jack and James, stating that they tried to rape Shelley, that she fought back, and that the men killed her. Not only does James Daly not take the stand because his attorney told him not to, his attorney never brings up the reason that James claims his pants were wet, because he was throwing a frisbee, getting the frisbee out of the water, not because he was in the water drowning Shelley. So legally, there are some serious issues with the defense on this matter. Things are looking bad for James Daly, but they are about to get much, much worse. The prosecution brings to the stand a couple of jailhouse snitches who say they've heard things about James Daly. But then the prosecutors bring in a third snitch, a man named Paul Skalnick. Paul has been in jail with James Daly for months. Paul gets on the stand and claims that James Daly confessed to him in prison, telling him that he killed Shelly Boggio and even gives the court some graphic details of the killing. James Daly claims he sat in shock listening to this man, who he barely knew, tell a total and complete lie about him. One juror later said that the testimony from Paul Skalnick, the snitch, combined with the fact that James didn't testify and tell his story, sealed his fate. James Daly is convicted of the murder of Shelly Boggio and is sentenced to die in the electric chair. Both Jack Piercy and James Daly are sent off to prison for the rest of their lives. During the course of usual appeals, court-appointed attorneys begin to get a very bad feeling about James' conviction. As he tells his story to them, they begin to believe him. I've heard James tell his story, and it is compelling. He is adamant that he had nothing to do with Shelley's murder. He is a meek man and comes off to me as someone who might be easily led. That's just my opinion. But yes, his interview makes me wonder. He even claims that he has felt guilt over Shelley's death, stating that he didn't know Jack was dangerous. And he further admits that he was living his life in a way he is not proud of. James' attorneys start looking into this jailhouse snitch, Paul Skalnick, and they are incredibly disturbed at what they find. Paul's own former attorney tells James' new attorneys, I wouldn't believe Paul as far as I could throw him. And then James' new attorneys uncover proof that Paul Skalnick has served as a jailhouse snitch 28 times. It just, our system, I still think it's one of the better systems in the world, but there are some issues. Paul Skalnick was a con man. He passed hot checks. He posed as an insurance agent while he stole from his clients. He was a liar. He was a cheat, and he was not a man to be trusted. He married women and stole their money, and even worse, he abused their children. Paul Skalnick fits perfectly into this story about bad men. But did Paul Skalnick put an innocent man behind bars for the majority of his life? Is James Daly innocent? It matters more now than ever, because right now, James Daly is facing execution. After decades proclaiming his innocence, filing appeal after appeal, and claiming he did not get a fair trial, the state of Florida is ready to put James Daly to death. Prosecutors have admitted that they knew Paul Skalnick is a con man, a child actor, and a thief, but that they, quote, vetted him and believed him when he told them about what James Daly did to Shelley Boggio. But it's very funny. Those same prosecutors did not only omit the fact that Paul Skalnick was a sex offender, but they intentionally kept that information from the jury. The prosecutor's notes actually show that the words sex offender on his notepad are crossed out when he introduced Paul to the jury. Another prosecutor then goes on to tell the jury that Paul Skalnick is in prison for nonviolent offenses, which is entirely untrue. A big part of the reason that he was there is for violence against children. So we've got major, major problems with this conviction. Sounds like James Daly had inadequate defense and the prosecutors misled the jury. The prosecutor now claims that Daly has had his appeals and his conviction has been upheld during those appeals, but James' attorneys claim that Skalnick's testimony should have been thrown out because of this misleading of the jury that happened from day one. And we all know how difficult it is to get a conviction turned over on appeal. Then prosecutors made claims that Paul Skalnick, the snitch, had been charged with sexual assault, but then the case was dropped. So we're kind of splitting hairs at this point. People who know Paul Skalnick say he is a liar through and through, and that nothing he says is to be believed, let alone something he said that may lead a man to the death chamber. Lawyers at the Innocence Project take up James Daly's case. In 2017, they are able to get Jack Piercy to sign an affidavit stating he and he alone is responsible for killing Shelley Boggio. In 2018, a judge does grant James Daly a new hearing, and who does he call as the star witness? Jack Piercy, James' former friend, now a convicted murderer who has been sitting in prison for decades after pointing the finger at the man he is being asked to exonerate. After 35 years, James and Jack are back in the same courtroom together. Jack takes the stand to testify as to what he said in this affidavit, stating he and he alone murdered Shelley. And what does he do? He says he lied in the affidavit. He refuses to say that James Daly is innocent. He refuses to answer questions posed to him by James' attorneys, and he refuses to cooperate. James is obviously devastated by this, and so are his attorneys, but they keep at it. Again in 2019, James' attorneys get Jack Piercy to sign an additional affidavit stating he is the only person responsible for the murder of Shelley Boggio. But will it be enough? March 5th, 2020. James Daly is brought to the courthouse from death row, asking the court to vacate his death sentence. At this point, his death warrant has already been signed. Jack Piercy is also brought into the courtroom. James' attorneys are hopeful that forcing Jack to face James once again will move him to be more open and truthful. Instead, Jack stands in front of the judge and says, "I can't help bring Shelley back or stop the pain her family has already suffered. I don't want to testify." James sat in the courtroom and wept. James later said, "Jack has always said he won't tell the story as long as his mother is alive." And of course, there she was, sitting in the courtroom. Even though Jack doesn't want to testify, James' attorneys still insist that they hear from him and they put him on the witness stand. They want him to repeat what he has stated in the affidavit. Jack is sworn in, and not only will he not testify as to what he signed, he will not even answer the attorney's questions. He sits there and says nothing and then finally starts saying, "I plead the fifth." He finally does make one statement saying, "I won't help the state kill somebody else." He says he sat in prison for 35 years for a crime he didn't commit, and that's all he has to say. why sign the affidavits and then come into court? It seems to me that there might be some strong validity to James' claim that Jack doesn't want to say what he did in front of his mom. Shelley Boggio's half-sister, Callie, then asks to make a statement. She tells the judge that her family has been through enough and they want this to end. She says, Shelley's life matters. It has always mattered. Her family is convinced that James Daly is responsible for their loved one's death, and they want his sentence carried out. 3 months later, the judge makes a ruling on the hearing. He will not vacate James Daly's death sentence. The death penalty ruling will stand. Just after this ruling, Paul Skalnick, the snitch, died, ruling out the possibility that he may one day recant his testimony. As it stands right now, James Daly is scheduled to be executed soon. At the time of my recording, a date has not been set, but I will follow this case, and I guess we will have to wait and see whether or not I will be featuring James Daly on an episode of Dining with the Damned. So where do you stand after hearing all of this? Has an innocent man spent his life in prison? Is an innocent man about to be executed? Or has a very bad man been punished as he awaits the ultimate punishment for the horrific murder of a young girl who had her entire life taken from her one night on a rocky beach, simply because she was growing up too fast? My heart goes out to Shelley's family. They have really been through the ringer, and it's not over yet. I think this is an important case because it forces us to examine the justice system, the death penalty system, and the very difficult appeals process. But it's most important because it's the tale of a young girl who had her life taken from her in an evil act that took only minutes, but changed many lives forever. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. If you like the video, hit the like button and subscribe to my channel if you would like to support me and see more content like this. It really does help me out a lot. Stay safe and be kind to each other. And I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Horton's. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.